It's Thursday, September 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Islamic State is on the move while digging in for new attacks.
Capacity is perhaps the binding constraint within Myanmar to both formulate and implement policies.
Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi is making a visit to the United States. Also ahead, Apple's new iPhone 7 is out. Are investors impressed? Bridget Jones fans have something new to watch. All is coming up on today's International Edition. Islamic State fighters forced out of their Libyan stronghold in Sirte may be flowing south to join Boko Haram or west to pose a threat to the rest of North Africa. That's the latest warning from Tunisia's defense minister. Speaking at a security conference this week in Paris, Farhat Hachani said about 1,000 Tunisians have joined jihadist groups, and with Islamic State's recent setbacks, they may return home, and he said there's no regional strategy to deal with it. Media reports said despite losing territory in its self-proclaimed caliphate in Syria and Iraq since its high point in 2014, along with the deaths of several senior leaders, the Islamic State group remains a potential and potent threat. It continues to attract new recruits, obtains weapons, and carries out international terrorist attacks. Reuters, in a commentary, said the Sunni Muslim jihadist group has inspired or carried out a terrorist attack every 84 hours since June. R. Nicholas Pallarino, a visiting professor at Georgetown University in Washington, says one of the biggest setbacks to the Islamic State group was the loss of the Syrian border region following Turkey's intervention 2 weeks ago.
They are certainly losing ground, and that border area is certainly important to them. They're going to end up using other means to try to smuggle out the oil, smuggling routes, get weapons in and supplies. So that is a major setback. However, what you still have out there is the ideology, and that ideology is not going to go away anytime soon. And that's what the United States and Western nations and other countries in the Middle East who are aligned with us need to focus on.
Pallarino adds Islamic State will continue its tactic of consolidating urban strongholds to maintain its ability to attack.
Well, of course, they're going to continue that form of terrorism as much as they can. And they'll use bases in Mosul, use bases in Raqqa to try to extend their reach and undermine the influence of the Iraqi government, especially. Until we can get in there and root them out, they'll continue to do this.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says his country would be ready to join any future operation proposed by the United States to liberate the Syrian city of Raqqa from Islamic State. Turkish media report Erdogan told journalists traveling home with him Wednesday from the G20 meeting the issue was brought up by U.S. President Barack Obama during their talks on the sideline of that summit in China. It's time now for us to turn to our social media segment with G. Abby Lee. She's right here in Studio 22, joining us with what's trending online. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. The trending hashtag throughout Wednesday was hashtag Apple event and hashtag iPhone 7. When you use the first hashtag on Twitter, it shows the Apple logo next to it. The tweet that got a lot of attention is by the company itself. It's on Twitter, at Apple, and sent out this tweet with a short clip. Missed our big launch news? Here it is in 107 seconds. Don't blink. The fast-paced video shows iPhone 7 and iPhone 7 Plus in various colors. And what, like widely anticipated, they have no headphone jack and are water resistant.
Okay.
But I have to add, the tweet has since been deleted. I don't know why. It has been doing that throughout the day. I could see it at one point during the day and not the next second.
All right, so no headphone jack and no tweet.
Nothing.
Internet users, though, were right on the money. What's the reaction like?
Some people are definitely loving the new product. One person tweeted, "Okay, shut up, Tim Cook, and take my money. Cook is the Apple CEO." But the overall response is that people are not impressed and kind of upset about not having the option to use a set of headphones. Now, instead of headphones, you can use a set of new devices called AirBuds.
Okay, and these are essentially wireless headphones, right?
That's right. They look like the top part of existing iPhone headphones, the part that you plug into your ears. And some people online were joking they look like tiny hair dryers and that it'd be hard to find them once you lose them. Another big difference is that you need to pay $160 for them.
Oh, you don't want to lose those.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what else happens to be trending today?
Jim, we talked about the canceled bilateral meeting between President Obama and his Filipino counterpart Duterte yesterday, but it may be that they have met each other after all. The AP sent out a breaking news tweet that reads like this. Breaking. Philippine officials say their president and Barack Obama have met informally after spat over Filipino leaders' crude language. But Washington has yet to confirm this claim. The AP reported Philippines' foreign secretary told the news agency that the two leaders met informally on Wednesday before a gala dinner. That's all for me today, Jim.
Okay, well, thanks for that great wrap-up, G. And you can find both of us on Twitter. We're at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, President Obama tells young people in Laos they have an opportunity, but must do the work. South China Sea tensions persist at ASEAN. Philippine government defends decision on hero burial for Marcos. Former UN Chief Annan meets with Muslim Buddhist communities in Myanmar. Pakistan's most persecuted minority suffers further discrimination. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and some video with them, plus a lot more at the voanews.com website and on your smartphone with our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The United States says Myanmar's de facto leader, State Councilor Aung San Suu Kyi, will visit the United States next week, including a meeting with President Barack Obama and American business leaders. It will be her first visit since her National League for Democracy swept last November's elections. White House Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes in Laos said that the meeting with Mr. Obama will take place September 14th, and he expects the future of sanctions imposed during decades of military rule will be high on the agenda.
Since the NLD-led government took office, we have looked precisely at this question of what we can do to help. Some of that is related to providing direct assistance, and we've significantly increased the assistance through USAID, much of which is in the space related to capacity building, so that they're better able to attract investment and create the type of legal frameworks that can grow their economy, in addition to dealing with specific issues like conflict resolution and trafficking. I think the biggest thing that we can do is help their economy grow, again, by opening up greater trade between Myanmar and the United States and other countries around the world.
Rhodes said sanctions relief has already begun, and he said the United States wants to make sure that there is a democratic dividend. He said the best way to encourage human rights in Myanmar, also known as Burma, is to ensure democracy succeeds. Washington-based Southeast Asia Senior Associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, Vikram Nehru, told VOA's Victor Beatty, Aung San Suu Kyi is seeking greater foreign investment and sanctions relief a key.
I suspect that she will not ask for them to be lifted, but that she will ask for them to be eased because she is interested in getting more U.S. investment into the country. She has to demonstrate that her policies and her government are yielding economic dividends for the people. And secondly, I think she is going to seek help from the United States for increased support to build capacity in her government. I think capacity is perhaps the binding constraint within Myanmar to both formulate and implement policies.
What kind of capacity, what kind of help can the U.S. offer?
In building the capacity of ministries, in the infrastructure sectors, for example, and building capacity within the central bank, building capacity within the Ministry of Finance, which will yield increased capacity within the government to, as I said, formulate policies and actually implement them. A third thing which I think that she will be very interested, and I know that she will be meeting with the U.S. business community, is to increase U.S. investment. And that, I think she's going to basically ask for increased U.S. business interests, expanding their operations within Myanmar, and linked to that, I think she will ask for easing of sanctions.
They're mostly targeting some Burmese generals. How likely will these sanctions be lifted?
There are three areas where the sanctions are currently focused on. The first is on military-related businesses within Myanmar. The second, as you point out, are specific designated individuals. And the third is on imports of gems and valuable items such as jade and so forth. Myanmar would like to see an easing of the restrictions on U.S. businesses being able to do transactions with Burmese individuals. Now, that would mean basically shrinking the list of specially designated individuals. I think easing that constraint will help U.S. businesses expand operations.
I know her tenure is relatively brief at this point, but how is she doing as a leader in Myanmar?
Well, so far, I think she's doing extremely well. She has focused her attention on the peace process. But given the fact that her focus is on these social and political challenges, I think she has paid less attention to economic reforms. And there hasn't really been any major economic reform that's been announced by the government since she was elected to power.
Aung San Suu Kyi's visit comes amid efforts to find answers to Myanmar's sectarian and ethnic divides. Her government has established an advisory council led by former UN Chief Kofi Annan to resolve the conflict between Rohingya Muslims and majority Buddhists. She also attended the first peace conference on August 31st to end some of the world's longest civil wars. Nehru said that this will be a long and difficult process, and patient, and many more meetings are going to be necessary. Apple has unveiled its new and highly anticipated iPhone 7. Just how will investors react? Apple stock was slightly off on Wednesday, but it's the long-term outlook that Apple is banking on. VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino joins us from New York with more.
It was interesting. The announcement was made via video on Twitter, and these are some of the details that we got. It will have a longer battery life, but that remains to be seen because there's a lot of other updated processors. They also said that the phone will be water resistant, and I would love for them to do the toilet test because I've broken three of my phones that way. So the truth remains to be seen. We're going to get some camera enhancements. The big issue, there will be a wireless jack, but the new phones are going to be coming with a lightning adapter to help consumers with the migration over to the wireless headphones. Reason being is they want to make this phone water resistant to be competitive with Samsung. So you need to close up that hole with the analog connector. This is also interesting. Super Mario is coming to the iPhone. Pokemon is coming to the iWatch. So it wasn't really Apple stock I was looking at. I was looking at shares of Nintendo, which trade under a 5-ticker symbol NTDOY because it's an ADR. And that shot up about $5, $6 on that announcement alone. I mean, we know what the Pokemon craze has been like. So essentially, this iPhone is going to be bringing more video game technology to it. Here are some of the key questions that we're looking at. Will consumers wait for the 10-year anniversary iPhone, which is next year? That could be perhaps why we didn't see major innovations on this phone. And the other question is it reasonable to expect Apple to come out with a brand new innovation like the iPhone every cycle? So there wasn't much reaction in the stock. You have to remember that this is still a high-margin business. So I think the announcement was in line with what the market and the techie gadget geeks were looking at. And I think really what they're waiting for is the 10-year anniversary phone.
Well, we'll definitely watch out for that. And any innovation that Apple makes always makes news. The markets as a whole have been kind of bubbling along at or near record highs. Not much has been moving the markets. And we don't have a lot really for investors to look at right now.
Right. We are not going to have much until we get to that September 21st interest rate decision meeting, and their expectations are anywhere from the 20-30% range that the Fed will, in fact, raise interest rates. Beyond that, then we're looking at earnings season that kicks in October and, of course, the election. However, this morning, the NASDAQ hit an all-time high. We have not traded at these levels since the dot-com bubble in the late 90s, early 2000s. A big part of that is Facebook and Amazon continuing to hit new highs.
Yes, the so-called FANG stocks with Google in there as well.
And Netflix, yep.
Right. Renewed interest in those.
There is, but right now this seems to be what the marketplace is looking for. You have Amazon where, you know, I myself do 90% of my shopping through Amazon. Facebook is becoming the medium for media outlets. I report on Facebook Live every day. In fact, I report on Snapchat for 10-second hits every day. This is really the medium where people are coming to get their news.
And stability is what investors like, and these two especially are extremely stable and growing.
That is true. They are stable and growing. I think, you know, there's a couple of analysts out there with pretty high targets out there on Facebook looking at anywhere from 200 to 300 is I've seen. So, you know, this is the new medium.
We always find stability and great information from Jill Malandrino from New York. Jill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And be sure to stop by voanews.com for more on the Apple iPhone launch. You can also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, check out our Facebook page. It's VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. The beloved characters of Bridget Jones and her on-again, off-again love interest Mark Darcy are back in the third installment of the Bridget Jones franchise, Bridget Jones Baby. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, this film introduces a new character, American entrepreneur Jack Quant, who just could be the father of Bridget's little one.
So there I was, surrounded by my friends, and all ready for my happy ever after. At least that's how I pictured it. The reality was much more single.
Renee Zellweger returns as Bridget Jones after more than a decade since the last film in this series. Zellweger says that even though some time has passed, the character still has a universal appeal.
Now she's authentic, and she's flawed, and her optimism and her determination to succeed in spite of her sort of, I don't know, failings or her imperfection is inspiring. And I think it's made her a really beloved character.
Bridget is a successful but unhappily single 40-something TV producer, and she has broken up with her one-time love interest, Mark Darcy, played by Colin Firth. Bridget's romantic life revives when she meets Jack Quant, a handsome American played by Patrick Dempsey, known to fans as McDreamy for his role as Dr. Derek Shepherd on the TV show Grey's Anatomy. Director Sharon Maguire says that Dempsey was a natural choice to play the new character.
And he definitely played it as the all-American dream guy. And that was a great foil for Mr. Darcy, who is so constipated, so British, so repressed, so old world. And Jack is so new world that it was a fantastic combination, I think.
But after she meets Jack, Bridget and Mark have a steamy encounter, and Bridget turns up pregnant. There's only one problem. She's not really sure who the father is.
And we got on very well and sort of had relations. And the next week, that is to say on the 11th of the month at Jude's baby christening, to be exact, following the consumption of quite a lot of alcohol, Mark and I, well, we had similar relations. And this is the funny part, I suppose. Owing to these relations, the resulting life form currently residing in my tummy could actually, in fact, be either of yours.
Colin Firth says that Dempsey is a contrast to the former bad guy in Bridget's life, Daniel Cleaver, played in the first two films by Hugh Grant. And that makes him more of a threat to Mark Darcy's hopes with Bridget.
You know, this is one trump card, is I'm the good guy. I'll save you from the villain, but he's also doing the same thing. And I'm the old guy, and he's the new guy, and, you know, it's, I've got no surprises for her. She knows me all too well.
Bridget Jones's Baby also stars Sarah Soleimani as Bridget's new best friend, Miranda, while Sally Phillips reprises her role as Bridget's friend Sharon, or Shazza. Oscar and BAFTA winner Jim Broadbent returns as Bridget's father, while BAFTA award winner Gemma Jones plays Bridget's mom. Oscar, BAFTA, and Golden Globe winner Emma Thompson is Bridget's doctor, and Grammy-winning singer-songwriter Ed Sheeran appears as himself in the film. Bridget Jones's Baby opens in the United States September 16th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website. That's voanews.com. And while you're online, check out our Facebook page, VOA Now, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. You'll always have the latest information from any of those. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Dan Crafton. Without them, we couldn't put this show on. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all here in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A preventative vaccination campaign against yellow fever was launched on August 17th in the Democratic Republic of Congo by the government. The United States, through USAID and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, has provided crucial support to the response to the epidemic of yellow fever. USAID used its approximately $1 million established PREDICT project to resupply L'Institut National de Recherche Biomédicale with needed materials to continue yellow fever diagnostics. USAID also worked through an existing partner to assist CDC to procure needed materials and person time for a study investigating immunogenicity of fractional minimal dosing of yellow fever vaccine. It is estimated that the use of fractional minimal dosing in this campaign can confer up to a year of immunity for vaccinated individuals. The study will help establish if protection actually lasts longer than 1 year, thereby easing pressure on a limited global stockpile of yellow fever vaccine. In terms of technical support, several experts from the CDC and USAID are working with the Congolese Ministry of Health, INRB for data management, quality assurance, and daily updates. The U.S. government, through its experts, regularly participates in meetings and contributes to the identification of training needs and development programs. Many of the platforms developed to implement a successful mass polio vaccination campaign have been utilized to support the current yellow fever campaign. USAID has been funding Emerging Pandemic Threat, EPT, activities in the DRC since 2010, including training health workers to prevent, detect, and respond to epidemic threats and building lab capacity, and has an EPT budget of $17 million for fiscal year 2015 to 2017. The U.S. government, which is also the third largest donor to Gavi, the Alliance vaccine, supports the introduction of new vaccines through the routine system, while also providing support to the global stockpile of a few essential vaccines, including yellow fever, which can be deployed for targeted campaigns. Gavi provides over $10 million for yellow fever vaccine and operational costs to support the current vaccination campaign. The U.S. is proud to work with its partner, the Democratic Republic of Congo, to help protect the Congolese people from a deadly threat, yellow fever.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.